der Automation Podcast. Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge über Technologien, Trends und Nutzen von Automation.
Wir, das sind Kurt Bettenhausen und ich, Thomas Tauchnitz. Wir freuen uns darüber, dass ihr in dieser Folge dabei seid. Interessante Gäste, aktuelle Themen und offene Gespräche sind das, was ihr von uns erwarten könnt.
A very warm welcome to our guest Juan Aparicio, founder and CEO of Reshape Automation, who joined us from the US West Coast today. Dear Juan, please introduce yourself to our listeners.
Thank you very much for having me in your podcast, Kurt and Thomas. It is a pleasure to reconnect and connect also with your audience. I am Juan Aparicio, co-founder and CEO of Reshape Automation. I have been in automation almost all my career, and most of it thanks to Kurt here, where I had the chance to work together during my time at Siemens. I spent 10 years at Siemens. The last role was Head of Advanced Manufacturing Automation Research Group in Berkeley, California. And lots of stories there that can probably fill an entire podcast. After that, I joined Ready Robotics as VP of Product and Rapid Robotics, another robotics startup in the automation space. And then since October 2023, that's when I decided to be the crazy founder, and I found Reshape. And I always like to explain Reshape as we are a robotics and automation company that does software for people, not robots, because there is a lot of people involved in selling a robot, in installing a robot, in deploying it, in maintaining it. And that's what we make easy. We make easy for the automation vendors to sell more robots and more automation, and for their customers to discover it and configure it and get faster quotes and get robots and automation for what it's worth in the shop floor faster.
Thank you, Juan. What inspired you to start Reshape Automation as creative founder? And what problems are you solving in the automation space?
So if you see the number of robots deployed in the US, and robots correlate with also automation systems. Last year, it was pretty flat from the previous year, and it was 30,000 robots. Just to put in perspective, China deploys 400,000. So what China does in a month, we do in the US in entire year. And I don't believe it's because the robots are not capable enough. Robots are having more and more capabilities, but there is something going on that the market is very liquid. There is a lot of vendors, very good technology, a lot of potential buyers, but not enough transactions. And that is what inspired us to start Reshape, to really analyze from first principles why we are not deploying more automation in this country and in the Americas and in the world, and what can we do to eliminate those barriers, to add more transparency to the market so people understand how to deploy automation, what is needed, what are the prices, and for the automation vendors to be much more efficient to react to the customer requests.
Juan, maybe we give you 1 minute to tell us what are the core ideas of Reshape Automation and what is your business?
Thank you, Thomas, for the opportunity. We are a US-based startup. I always like to explain that we are a robotics and automation startup that writes software for people, not robots. And this software is made for automation professionals by automation professionals. And that's very important, right? We understand the industry. We have the scars of deploying robots. And so we understand the pains. And we offer software for both the manufacturers, but mainly for the robotic OEMs, system integrators, automation, also component vendors, distributors. We simplify complex workflows for enterprise customers, for this kind of customers, helping these sales teams save time, close deal faster, and all of that using practical AI solutions. So, for example, you go to a three factories during the day, have done tons of pictures, you go back home, it's time to put the kids to bed, now you have finally time, and you don't remember which factory said what, where you put the photos, and then you have to upload all this information into your CRM, into Salesforce, to keep everything, all the records there. We automate the entire process. Or your customer wants to go to your website and experience your product, make orders online, like you do everything else. Why I cannot order a new HMI online? Well, we create those white label marketplaces powered by AI so that customers can, you can give them a modern e-commerce experience, even on your current website. Or you are tired, you are a distributor, and you are getting all these questions. Where is my new PLC going to show up? Or I need a replacement for this M12 cable. I don't care the brand, but get something by tomorrow because it broke. All of that takes a lot of time. And we automate that with different knowledge bases that customers can interact, can ask questions, can find the right thing for their needs, the right products, and then automate all the back office that from the moment that someone expresses an interest until they get the systems in the shop floor. So in summary, Reshape builds AI-powered sales automation software, and we do it for the industrial automation sector by industrial automation professionals, right? Every workflow that you have, if you're an automation vendor and you have workflows that are manual, we can automate them with AI, and we can help your customers experience your company in a more modern and more advanced AI-powered way.
Juan, you have a very international background. You are, and I can mention this if you allow, originally from Spain. You joined a huge corporation after your time at the university. You've been with a startup, then you started your own startup. What motivates you, and what do you like most in your own co-owned company?
Yes. So I will say that the thing that motivated me comes back to the time where I discovered automation and how, coming from the telecommunications background, 5G, 6G, this is all, we were ahead of the customers, right? This is always going, I give you something new and then customers react and use more bandwidth. But then you discover automation back in 2013, 12. And then you start realizing, okay, you are still moving bits between PLCs. That's how you move and program these very complex factories. Like, the possibilities are endless. And we are still very early in the journey to the sky's the limit there. And fell in love about automation. And then, but as much as I love automation, what I really hated that motivated that I started Reshape is that I go to every factory and they are all, I cannot find labor. Labor is a huge pain. I have to run 80% capacity because I don't have people. And then why don't you automate? Ah, this is too complex, right? This is going to take years. This is, I don't have the capabilities. Who's going to maintain this? So we wanted to make that very easy. What motivates me is having customers that see the value of what we are building, that invested on us, that trust us, and now they are seeing the fruits and the results on that investment. It is also about team, right? It's, I have the luxury to work with other 11 people in the US, Mexico, and Colombia. So we are still a very international team, very distributed, but amazing professionals, like the absolute best software engineers I've worked in my life. And learning from them, learning from my team is just extremely rewarding. And doing something, I mean, when you're a founder, you have to be a little bit, I don't know, say crazy, but a little bit, is you have to fight the status quo, and that takes a lot of time. It's just pushing a ball up in the mountain, or because you are changing something that has been done differently for a long time, right? And that takes a lot of determination. It's a roller coaster. But on the other side, it is pretty rewarding when you realize that everything in the world has been made by other founders, right? Like, we wouldn't have an iPhone without Steve Jobs, right? Electric cars, the push from Elon Musk and others. There is a lot of everything in our world has been done with this kind of startup mentality. It just takes a lot of thick skin and a lot of perseverance and grit. And lastly, I think it's also extremely exciting to ride this wave of AI because it's more than a hype word, right? This just happens a few times in your career that you've tapped into technology that has so much disruptive potential. It happened with the internet in the early 2000s, but this is going to be even bigger. And just working with the cutting edge technology and making it practical for applications in an industry that I love that much as automation manufacturing, that's what motivates me.
Juan, how do you see automation and robotics shaping the US manufacturing and logistics industries over the next 5 years?
So the next 5 years are going to be very interesting. I think probably, as usual, automation correlates with the needs from manufacturing. And as you probably all are following the news, probably nobody knows what is happening in 2 months, right? Or even next week. So let alone in 5 years. But what I can see is that there are wins, are very positive wins for manufacturing in the US, right? We realize, and no surprise to anybody, that manufacturing things on the other side of the Pacific was not the best idea in the world for geopolitical reasons, but also for climate reasons, right? Putting things in ships that go all over, back and forth from China to the US is not the best, the best setup. So it makes sense to do it close to where the customers, your customers are. That's one of the wins. Then automation is getting cheaper too, and more affordable. So ROI is easier to justify. So just plus, and that these two things are kind of positive for the manufacturing. The other thing is that the realization that there is no labor anymore. Right? There are right now 700,000, between 700,000 and 1 million job openings in the US in manufacturing alone, not counting warehouses, just manufacturing, right? And this is not going to get better, right? There are no, we also have a population crisis, like population is getting older. Most of the average welder in the US is, for example, 55 years old. So we need automation. Right now is not a time to where you could decide, okay, I will automate in 5 years. It has to be now, because otherwise in 5 years, you probably are not even open.
Juan, what are the biggest barriers preventing widespread use of automation and robotics across industries? You mentioned one, lack of labor, but I think that's not the only one.
That is true. And I think there is a big correlation between processes and automation. When you try to automate a process that is not optimal, you're going to highlight the suboptimalities and it's going to become a disaster, right? When you automate a process that is already optimal, it's going to highlight the things that you do well, and it's going to multiply your efficiency. And that's what I see particularly for in the US. In the US, 98.6% of all manufacturers are considered small and medium enterprises. Right? They are not the big, the Teslas or the Fords. They are their suppliers and the suppliers of the suppliers and the small job shops, the mom and pop. And they have been doing the same thing for 20 years, 30 years. You can see, right? There is oil on the floor. There are machines that have been patched 1,000 times. And it's very hard when they look into automation as this is going to solve all my problems. Well, this is a tool, right? A tool that is going to help you. And you can do this process of optimization at the same time or in the same context that you are deploying automation. But if you think that you can just put an autonomous mobile robot and it's going to just work without changing the aisles or the traffic of your forklifts, that's not going to work. Or if you think that suddenly you put a camera and you can do visual inspection and quality inspection, you're not going to get any defects. No, the thing that is going to highlight is that you didn't have a proper protocol to determine if the parts were good or bad. These are the things that highlight. When you put automation, there is no hiding. There is not a person that can hide all the inefficiencies in your process. It's going to become very clear what works and what doesn't. And now, so that's a big barrier, right? Because you have to do these two things. And people see things like when I talk with small and medium enterprise, they see this as a big enterprise that they have to, a big quest that they have to get into, right? It's not just I buy one thing, solve my problem. So they need to think deeper and they think this is going to cost a lot of time. But on the other side, they have to start thinking automation as just another tool in their tool belt. And in that way, and something that they need to we train on, to train their people on, the same way that they go train in other parts of their business. And then those are the kinds of businesses that will thrive in the future.
Thank you. That's a perfect overview. Let's switch over to technology and innovation. Juan, how do you see AI and machine learning playing a role in the next generation of automation solutions?
It's a question that is close to my heart, right? A few years ago, 2016, I had a crazy boss called Kurt Bettenhausen that decided, okay, go to Berkeley and try to answer this question. Will deep learning revolutionize the world of automation and robotics? Right? This was one of the questions that I had on my plate. And back then, 2016, everything was autonomous cars. Like now nobody, when we try to work with universities, with Stanford, with Berkeley, best professors in the world, they all got tons of funding from the Ubers, the Googles in the world, and now Waymos. And manufacturing was something that was done overseas. But we were able to convince them that actually manufacturing is the right place for AI because of the constraints that you can establish that you cannot do in public roads. And funny enough, at least three of these professors, if not more, have now companies in our space, startups in the robotics and manufacturing space. So we definitely make a difference there, made a difference. Going back to your question, so AI and machine learning in automation, I see two threats, right? On one side is using AI for robots. And what we are seeing today is the fruits or the results from the first deep learning wave that started 2012. So we are seeing applications that were very difficult to automate a few years ago, mostly in intralogistics, like bin picking, like parcel sorting, like depalletizing, palletizing with heterogeneous loads, that now they are possible. Even some kind of surface treatment like welding using some learning techniques. So those are possible today, and there are startups and companies already utilizing those methods, these golden nuggets of AI. On the other side, there are still tasks that are on the frontier, mostly manipulation, tasks that require dexterity. And we will see them, I mean, interestingly enough, yesterday, Google Gemini announced, like DeepMind announced or released their foundational model for robotics for the physical world with promising results, right? It's just going to take, it's natural that it takes at least 10 years to achieve this 99.99% of maturity that manufacturing required. So maybe not in the next years, but in the 10 years, a lot of robots will be more flexible thanks to these foundational models. And that's one road, right, where is this machine learning or AI for robots. On the other side, what we are seeing also today is AI, machine learning, LLMs that are not precise. These are the ChatGPT kind of style interactions. They may be 80% precise, but this 80%, if there is a human in the loop, it goes a long way. So we are seeing more and more and ourselves using more and more AI to program, to create at least the first program for software or for a robot, AI that helps augment your workforce, that helps you debug better what is going on in the shop floor, that makes it very easy to talk with your customer to understand the requirements and to create a solution that is not just one-off for some system integrators, but something that reduces part of their expertise. So very optimistic on the future that we are. It's going to be more and more. And just as a recap, a lot of golden nuggets already in use in the robots and tons of opportunity to use LLMs and AI for the people around automation.
Yeah, thanks. We started with AI as technology. What other emerging automation technologies do you believe will have the biggest impact on US business in addition to AI?
This is like a time machine. So going back to 2014, also thanks to Kurt, we wanted to design this factory of the future in the form of a lab. And we came, the first exercise was defining what Industry 4.0 really is, right? What was? And we came up with four pillars of, okay, this is modularity, is digital twin, is flexibility, and is autonomy, right? If you remember, Kurt. And I see the same technologies today. It's like nothing has changed, but now it's more real. It's not only in the lab, it's in the shop floor. And that is, again, on this realization that I heard Rodney Brooks, the founder of iRobot, Roomba, Rethink Robotics, and now he's also founding Robust AI, so very well-known figure in robotics, said this recently, that it takes 10 years for a technology to add another 9 in the precision, right? So it takes 10 years to arrive to 99%, 10 years to 99.9, 10 years to 99.99%. So it's not surprised that the technologies that we were talking in 2014, now we are seeing them in the shop floor. So digital twins, simulation for as a way to sell faster, or digital twins as a way to have more flexibility, so your AI can tap into it, simulate the scenarios, and then once it works, once you have tested in the simulated work, deploy into the real world. More modularity, right? We are seeing that this, particularly for big companies, that this every application is custom, doesn't scale, right? So they prefer to cut a little bit on efficiency, but have more repeatability, more standardized solutions that can be configured in a way that you can react better to the changing economic conditions, right? It's a world that is changing, every day is changing. The needs from your customer are changing. You see tariffs. I need to now manufacture overseas. Now I go to Mexico. Now I go to the US. How do I react to that if my automation, if this big investment is rigid and I cannot modify? So now more than ever, flexibility is very important, and modularity with that, right? You need modules that, when combined and as combined, can react to them, to your business needs. So in a nutshell, well, nothing, no surprises there, but a lot of more maturity and players in this space, which helps the technologies also develop faster and get into shop floors.
Juan, you already mentioned the importance of smaller and medium-sized enterprises or companies in the US. How can smaller companies and startups even leverage automation without the large budgets of major corporations?
That's definitely, I would say that one of the nice also wins that we are seeing is that are in favor of automation is that prices are going down. The price of hardware, what it used to cost to have a LiDAR that could scan a cell, it was on the tens of thousands, and now cameras of $300. You could have same for robots. The price of hardware is getting cheaper. On the other side, companies used to do this, even and SMEs even more, used to do this very straightforward ROI calculations, where it is, okay, I have a robot, this is my price of labor, and I want to cover this in 18 months. And if you don't fit into this ROI calculation, I cannot automate. Now is, I don't have labor. So one of the variables is infinite. So I need to automate, right? It's just, so the next question for them is, where can I tap? If I don't have the capital, how can I tap into capital? And there are many startups now offering, like Formic or previously Rapid Robotics and other startups, Path Robotics, offering this robot as a service model, where you can start paying as you use the equipment. So big CapEx investments are no longer a showstopper. But I think the most important thing for them, for small and medium enterprises, is finding partnerships, right? Finding this kind of partner that they can rely on, that they are vendor independent, right? Because if you partner with a vendor, that vendor has a hammer, it's going to look like, right? And it's going to try to push you. If you are a collaborative company, robot company, well, they're going to try to find opportunities for cobots, but there may be opportunities for industrial arms too. Or if you are a specific vendor of an autonomous mobile robot, you can only transport pallets, then everything will that they will look into is transporting pallets, but there may be more efficient ways to do material handling. So that's also the way that we interact with manufacturers. We help the vendors get better processes, better tools, better software, modern AI-powered tools that allow them to be more reactive, more modern into the needs of the customers. And we help manufacturers on the other side through an open marketplace where they can see all the products, how much does it cost, and we act as that kind of Switzerland. We are independent on any vendor. We just want them to automate, and at the end of the day, help them get the processes right, get the right automation, and then find the right vendor for those needs. So in summary, it is there are new business models that are helping them, helping a small and medium enterprise. And also what is very important is for them to find the right partner in their journey, because it's a journey. It's not just, I go and buy something. It's, okay, I want to automate. I made that decision. I made a plan years ago that is dated 2019. Now it's 2025. I haven't started. Now is the time to try something different and catalyze, right? Do something that makes it faster and start small. I would say start today, but start with the lowest hanging fruit and then grow from there.
Juan, we already spoke about labor shortage or lacking of qualified people. On the other hand, automation was always suspect to kill jobs. What do you think will be the influence of more automation for creating new job opportunities and saving jobs on the other hand?
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you plot in one axis the amount of jobs created or jobs in manufacturing, and the other axis the amount of robots deployed. They correlate very nicely. So it's actually more robots means more work. Not the other way around. Obviously, when you introduce a robot, there are some repetitive tasks that will be automated. Tasks that like palletizing, like who wants to be loading boxes all day and breaking your back, right? For economic reasons, for reasons that they don't show, you cannot display your creativity at work. So I don't think we need to hide that automation will shift some of the work. On the other side, and I have been seeing robots deployed in manufacturing already for many years, I've never seen an instance where a robot got into a factory and someone got fired because of that. It's very, very interesting. Like jobs got repurposed. There are other things to do. There are always other things to do, right? And it's never like, okay, I have a full factory full of people. Now I don't have a factory and it's all automated, right? It's typically people find new jobs, they retrain and they get upskilled. So it is, I think it's going to play nicely. It's going to also create the demand new skills, right? As you deploy more robots, you will need new professions, and also particularly with AI. You need new ways to program those robots, to make them react to your needs, and jobs that we probably cannot even foresee, right? When the first printer was invented and everybody could read books, then people realized, oh, I need glasses, I don't see, right? And then the industry of glasses was born, right? So there are many of these examples across history where a new technology was introduced, people start realizing, okay, this is not good, this is going to steal our jobs, but then entire new industries were born. So I'm very optimistic about that topic and how it has proven time and time again that when more robots and automation get deployed, the quality of the work also goes up, and the quality of the output of the work and the work itself of the workers go up. I have examples where a robot was deployed and suddenly everybody wants to be around of that robot because that is the best task to be, to feed the robot, to work with it and not to do that manually. Or when a new visual inspection, not even robots, but automation, cameras doing quality inspection got introduced and it wasn't even turned on, but then the quality of the entire factory went up because suddenly that was That was the benchmark. But it's also true that the first reaction typically is not very positive. The first reaction is, okay, I'm going to hijack this thing. I'm going to push it. I'm going to make sure that it doesn't work as it's supposed to because I fear for my job. But dramatically, one time after another, we see that that's the first reaction. But immediately after, they see that actually this thing is not as it's not going to take all the jobs in the factory. It's just another tool that I have in my tool belt. Then everybody wants to work around that.
Well, that is an interesting aspect when you talk about upskilling or reskilling. We have an existing workforce. Not everybody can hire graduates from Stanford, UC Berkeley, MIT, just to name a few, if they introduce new technologies in automation and robotics. So how could this transition or even transformation, how could this transformation be supported by businesses and policymakers to approach this workforce reskilling to keep up with these advancements in automation?
I always use analogies that roboticists as like Renaissance engineers. They need to know mathematics, they need to know physics, they need to know controls. Now they need to know software and machine learning, so everything combined, mechanical engineering in one person, which is almost impossible to find, right? But as we create more robots, there will be more jobs on how these robots are designed, right? So that will explode. So that's one aspect where I think US universities do a good job as we transfer from less controls and more software. I think the US traditionally is extremely strong on the software side. On the other side, there are still many tasks where controls extremely, extremely important, and also the understanding of the fundamentals of automation and processes. Processes is what drives everything. Machinists, welders, right? People that need to get their hands dirty actually doing the work. This is going to become more and more important. And while Germany had a very strong and successful apprenticeship program, we don't have that in the US. There is a big gap in the US in terms of apprenticeships, of trades, because for a long time, people were pushed to the university thinking, get a degree in a university, that's how you make a living, while the rest of the world, like, not even have to cross the Atlantic Ocean. If you go to Mexico, very similar to Germany, where it doesn't really matter if you are an engineer or a computer science or if you are a machinist, you're going to have a great career in both ends. And we are seeing more and more that the new AI technologies, the types of roles that they automate are the ones that were safe in the past, right? A machinist will have still lots of work because they are not just putting things on a CNC, on a numerical control machine. They are cleaning, they are designing process, they are writing code, they are doing tons of things around to make sure that the business runs, and they will still be useful. Same for welders, right? You will have robots that help welding, but we will need tons of people to understand the art, because at the end of the day, automation is an art and a science. So going back to business and policymakers, anything that we can do to put trades and make manufacturing great again, if you want, this mama, or making it sexy again, right? That is not something, it's not like you are going to this dirty old factory. You are going to play with cutting edge technology. You are going to be using the cutting edge tech on AI, robots, machines. It's the best place for a graduate to grow skills in the real world. So anything that we can do on the policy side to help redirect the careers of the future students to those skills, that will be appreciated. And on the other side also, that comes together with funding, right? It's where business follows money, right? So where you put money, that's where the interest of the people and the focus will be. So more investment in manufacturing is definitely required. And as you invest more, there will be more opportunities and people will naturally find jobs in those places. But the last comment there, what is very important is, and links a little bit to what I said at the beginning, is that we have to act now, because most this generation, the generation that really knows how the factories are run, how the processes are run, they are retiring. And unless we can capture that domain knowledge, that's going to be lost, right? So it's very important to start capturing that domain knowledge in AI. There are AI tools, there are software tools that help you with that, but it's very important to do that now. Otherwise, it's going to be too late. And the kind of knowledge that they have may not be written in books.
Yeah, thank you. Let's speak about business and policy questions. How do US automation and robotics policies compare to those in Europe and Asia? And what changes would you like to see in the US or in the world?
I mean, Asia is also a big continent, right? And but if we see what China did, right, and it's a very good example on how prioritizing and saying, okay, we are going to be the makers of the world, and we are going to put the money where our worlds are, that work out for them, right? And it means subsidizing certain industries until they get profitable. It means helping and buying from local companies. And that has worked very well for them. And now almost 90% of the things that we use are made there. So touching first Asia, what I like to copy there is that kind of model of putting manufacturing first, realizing that we need to reindustrialize the U.S., that for a long time we could manufacture things overseas, and now it's not the case. And manufacturing needs to be brought back, and communities need to be a renaissance of these new factories and producing things locally. And it doesn't have to be the same way that we did it 20 years ago. That's the advantages. There are tons of new technologies that allow us to be more effective, more automated, and with higher degree of advanced manufacturing, right? From the point of view of Europe, I want to reemphasize these robots and automation is great, but they're also deployed by people, programmed by people, supported by people, and these people around need to be trained. So more investment, like copying a little bit this model of apprenticeships from Germany, bringing back trades. I mean, I want to double down on that. That is very important for people to be trained on automation, on control, on processes. And also from the public funding point of view, right, this kind of Fraunhofer Institutes, they have helped to bridge this gap that exists between universities and manufacturing. This technology readiness level 3 to 6, right? There is the 1 to 3, that is what is done in a university. If you want 7 to 9, that's what a company and a manufacturer typically is, their IP is what they, how they mature technology until it's ready. But there is a valley of death between the 3 and the 7 or the 3 and the 6. And for that, typically government funding really helps. It helped in the past in the US with institutes like the Advanced Robotics and Manufacturing arm. So we need more of those, because that's the only way that new tech can really have a safe haven in manufacturing, a safe place there, particularly with technologies that there is still some risk and they need the risk. So more public funding and putting manufacturing in the focus and make reindustrializing the top priority. Those are my wish list.
That sounds really great, but finally, business leaders have to invest. Not all of them are domain experts. Not all of them believe in the content and the technologies. They just read business figures. So what's the advice you would give to business leaders who are somehow hesitating to invest in automation?
I think, first of all, understanding that they are not the only ones, right? That automation is not something new. We have been automating processes for decades. And it has proven it's reliable. It's not the next hype word. It's one of the most underhyped technologies that is out there, because it just works and it just produces. And most of the things that we touch in the real world have come from an automated process. So see who else have done that in their industry, and they can copy it, right? Or they can talk with them, or they can join an association and see, hey, We are not the only ones. We have this problem. Can you help us, right? Find partners. That's why it's so important, because this nexus, these partners at the local level, at the state level in the US or at the country level or even internationally, can help you find similar examples. You may, if you go to your local supplier, that application that you need may be the absolute, the new thing for them. But in the overall scheme of things, I guarantee you, someone else has done it, right? So you can tap into that. You can see what ROI they had, what calculations they use, and how is it paying off for them. Also understanding that you don't have to automate, you don't have to get to a lights out automation tomorrow. Start with the low hanging fruit, the absolute easiest. I know that there is a very complex wire harness application that you want to do, because it's, nobody can do that. But on the other side, you have a person tending a pad printer. And let's start with that. Let's get comfortable there, train your people, invest in your people, because they are your biggest asset. And then at the same time, they are going to find the next opportunities, right? Have champions internally, right? People that know the processes. Talk with your soft floor and say, okay, what is your biggest pain point? What is happening here, right? And understand why things, and kind of start thinking of first principles on, okay, we have been doing this like the same way for 30 years. Now labor is not that cheap, and there is not labor at all in some cases. How do we rethink our processes of where does automation fit in order for us to survive for the next 5 years? Because now it's about survival. And I think survival and thrival, like, there is going to be two camps and probably nothing in the middle. People that automate and that continue in business in 5 years ago, and people that say, companies that say, no, I'm going to wait, and then it's too late, because it's going to be, this change in labor is going to be dramatic. Like, and we are already seeing it, particularly with the new policies, that there are factories that nobody shows up to work anymore. They cannot find operators. And now they realize, I want automation, right? I don't want one robot, I want three. But then it takes time. So the best time to start with automation was yesterday, but the next best time is today.
Juan, open end of this conference, of this talk. Are there any additional topics you would like to address which we have not covered yet?
I think it was a very comprehensive list of questions. We covered a lot of topics. Very excited, just reemphasizing a few ones, right? That it's probably like as a summary, reemphasizing that is now is the time to automate. Automation is a journey. It's not just going to be this silver bullet that solves all your problems, but it can be the mechanism, the catalyst that helps you also optimize your processes and get a better understanding of the inefficiencies, right? You have to start with that. Like, what is the waste in my factory, and how can automation help me eliminate this waste? I have a person that is moving parts from the other side of the factory to the assembly, and then doing assembly. That's time that person is not doing work that where they touch the part, where they touch the product. Can we automate that part? I have a person, I have continuous injuries of my the folks doing palletizing. Maybe that's the part that I need to look, right? And that is already today. And today there are many applications that are also possible that were not possible before. Reemphasizing bin picking used to be something that was done just by people. Now robots can do that. There are all sorts of automatic storage and retrieval systems that now fit. It used to be huge systems. Now they fit any warehouse. It's very important to find a partner, because there are so many options out there. And I think there are three types of companies, right? The ones that don't automate, okay, those are... if you want the losers here, those that automate, but they do the wrong, they do it wrong, right? They choose the wrong technology. They didn't take that seriously. That's even worse, because what you are going to see is that immediately you have spent your money, but you are not getting the results, right? So, and then there are the ones that do it right, and those are the big winners, right? And as I said, going back to this journey concept, having a partner or several partners in that journey, it is very important. Not suffering with this analysis paralysis. I have so many options. I don't know what to do. I don't take a decision. Well, do it with someone, start small, take calculated risks. I always like that also from Kurt in the past. Calculated risks that you know that you can increase the risk as you move and as you are more familiar with the technology. And invest in that, right? This is not something that eventually someone else is going to figure out for you. Someone else can help you, but you need to have the teams internally that understand the technology too and can maintain it and improve it. And that also goes hand by hand with AI, right? AI is an enabler. It's going to help more and more applications to be automated, but it also requires a different mindset and a way of thinking about automation. Automation used to be repeatable, deterministic. Now with AI, there are stochastic outcomes where depending on the task, slight variations, it may not work, right? So you need to start thinking about that and putting frameworks around the way that these new technologies are going to be implemented, and also work with the vendors to make sure that after they disappear, after they walk out of your factory, that you have the support that you need and that you have also the capabilities internally to maintain it and to make sure that production continues running and there are no surprises.
We have reached the end of our episode. Juan, what are the three key messages or most important takeaways for our listeners?
I would say number one for manufacturers and warehouses that are on the verge of, that are suffering that labor shortage, that they think that that's the new normal, that they have to live with that pain. There is a positive message here that that's not the case, right? That automation can help, can be, it's not this magic medicine that will solve all the problems, but it's a tool that you need to start adding to your tool belt. Number two for automation vendors, it's very important to be closer than ever to the customers, the needs of the customers. React faster, be flexible. That's how you are going to get more businesses. So tap into the new technologies that are already mature and that will multiply the possibilities of your team using software that is AI powered, that helps you win leads faster, that helps your customer discover your products in a more modern way, right? Look at your website. Is there a chatbot that really knows how to configure your products? Is there a way for them to experience how this product is going to fit into your shop floor? Look at your CRM, at your Salesforce or HubSpot or whatever tool you use. Is it up to date or is it completely outdated because your sales rep hate uploading deals once they have worked the entire day with factories? So invest in tools that help you stay closer to the customer and solving their problems, because that's the kind of skills that will be needed, and less on this back office stuff of creating quotes, on creating pricing, of creating nice websites. Upload that to people like Recip, right? We can help you with that. And three, so we have the manufacturers, we have the vendors, and there are the players around, right? There is the ecosystem, the lawmakers, the countries, the states. Put manufacturing at the forefront. Make industrialize, re-industrialize in our case, your top priority. Because that will create jobs that improve the quality of your community. It will make the economy more resilient. And at the same time, now it is the time. It's now or never, right? It's not something that someone else will solve. It's something that has so many ramifications. And I will say that there is no higher priority right now, at least for countries like the US, to start reindustrializing. So start now.
Thank you very much, Juan.
Thank you, Kurt. Thank you, Thomas. It is a pleasure.
Wir freuen uns, wenn ihr auch bei der nächsten Folge wieder dabei seid. Bis zum nächsten Mal beim Automation Podcast.
Vielen Dank, dass ihr heute interessiert dabei wart. Uns hat es Spaß gemacht, euch hoffentlich auch.